Welcome to the Council of Trent podcast, a production of Catholic Answers.
Some of my favorite speaking experiences have been at Catholic high schools and middle schools. When I'm invited and I meet teachers, staff members, and most importantly, students who are authentically on fire for their faith and want to go out and evangelize the world, it always gives me a lot of hope. But then some of my least favorite speaking experiences have been in Catholic high schools and middle schools, because frankly, some of the ones that I've spoken at are Catholic in name only. Thankfully, that's a minority of the schools that I've gone out to speak to. And a lot of times I'm invited by some of the few solidly Orthodox people on staff, some of the real deal Catholics on staff who want to, the people they want to evangelize are their other teachers and administrators. So they fight against tremendous odds to bring me in. And so I come in and I present the Catholic faith in a gracious way that has been well received in previous speaking engagements. And it's met with hostility because many of these teachers and administrators at so-called Catholic high schools are not really Catholic. I'll give you two examples. One, in my book, Counterfeit Christ, you can read about, I went and spoke at a Catholic high school and was asked about grave matter and confession. And I said, I gave a list of sins that are grave matter, like obvious ones nobody disagrees with, like murder or racism or genocide. And then I started to talk about abortion, contraception, homosexual behavior. And I could literally hear, I couldn't literally hear this. See, that's a grammar mistake. Go back to the old Grammar Nazi episode. But it felt like I could hear people's eyes rolling into the back of their heads. But what I could hear were laughs, snickers, people folding their arms and turning and talking to one another loudly as I was talking about this, because many of these teachers just did not believe abortion was a grave matter or a grave sin. They didn't think abortion was wrong. They couldn't imagine that contraception is wrong. That's just something the church has got to get over. Another school I went and spoke at several years ago, I gave a pro-life presentation. And during the presentation, many of the teachers were laughing. They were talking loudly. They were on their phones. I tell you, and I have friends who are teachers. They can vouch for this. Teachers can make the worst students. I think sometimes maybe they feel like they have a license that they can be rude because students have been rude to them all day and now they can cut loose, or at least with a teacher they don't agree with. So by the end of the presentation, I said, how many of you would want your students to hear a pro-life presentation like this? And out of 35 people at this faculty meeting, 5 of them raised their hands. And I said, well, I certainly hope none of your students end up making a destructive decision like this because you didn't want them to hear this message. And I called them out on it because somebody has to. And it is absurd to pay the amount of money that is required to fund a Catholic school, tuition-wise, to send your child to a Catholic school if it turns out that particular Catholic school hires a bunch of people that aren't really Catholic anyways or are actively undermining the Catholic faith. That's why I've told my wife I would either pony up the dough and send my child to a really, really good Catholic school. And one metric I think to find really good Catholic schools, I think they tend to be smaller than larger. The schools that I've known that have the holiest students, the most committed faculty, tend on average to be smaller rather than larger. Because when you're trying to operate a school, when you try to do anything, you have to understand that you have competing interests. My wife and I were talking about this a few weeks ago. You know, when you go out to eat at a restaurant, you can get food that's cheap, fast, or good. You can only have two of those three things. They have similar things in the service industry. It's like the service triangle. You can get it cheap and fast, but it ain't going to be good. You can get it good and fast, but you're going to pay through the nose for it. Or you can get it cheap and good, but it may take a long time to do. I don't know. But you can imagine that. So you have a lot of Catholic schools that want to be a prep school that's going to get kids into Ivy League. And they're going to have the Division I football team. And they're going to have the holiest students that will go out to defend the Catholic faith. A lot of times, though, I feel like when you have that many high goals you're trying to reach, some of them are going to end up being sacrificed. And frankly, it's the holiness that gets sacrificed in some of these Catholic schools, which we're going to talk about here in a second. But before I do, I want to give a big thanks and shout out to our supporters at TrenthornPodcast.com. You make the podcast possible. You've helped it to grow. We've been able to have dialogues with people who disagree. I'm hoping to travel soon to go to have dialogues with people who are kind of the professional apologists who stand in opposition to the Catholic faith. So I want to do that. I want to continue to expand the podcast to reach more people. And you make that possible with as little as $5 a month in monthly support here at TrendhornPodcast.com. Consider becoming a member. Get access to our study series. You get a, if $10 and up, you get a free copy of my new conversion story, Follow the Evidence. It's a wonderful story to be able to offer to you. And you, of course, make the podcast possible. Do go and check it out at TrendhornPodcast.com. Now, here's what I wanted to get into today. Several weeks ago, you probably remember the brouhaha at Brebeuf Jesuit Preparatory School. I've been waiting to say that for a while here now. That in Indianapolis, you could call it the tale of two Catholic high schools. There were two Catholic high schools that had teachers who were in a same-sex marriage. And I just found out recently the teachers are in a so-called same-sex marriage with one another. You have a male teacher at one school who is civilly married to a male teacher at another Catholic high school. And so there was a big controversy about that because one school let their teacher go for violating a morality clause and the other school did not. So that was several weeks ago, and I've been meaning to talk about it for a while now. But I've had a lot of other stuff on my plate. We've had a lot of great dialogues to share with you. It's funny. I've really enjoyed the comments and the feedback from people about the dialogues, and it's been good. It's been constructive. I think that it's unfortunate some of the previous dialogues, the people involved have been quite cantankerous. You know, they people say it's been frustrating to listen to, and it can be. But guess what? Our real conversations with people can be very frustrating. So one thing I try to do with these conversations is I want to model for you when you're talking to somebody who's frustrating, who's rude, you don't have to respond in kind. You can handle it with grace and graciousness. And I want to model that for you here on the podcast. Now, that being said, I would like these conversations to be something that you enjoy listening to. They don't have to be frustrating, even if we disagree. Like, I think the conversations I had with Randall Rouser on hell and on the Catholic Church were very productive. And Randall was very, he was intelligent. And he was courteous, even if he gave me pushback, which is fine. So I'm going to keep seeking out guests who meet that high caliber of being gracious, intelligent, and even though they oppose the Catholic faith. So if you know people like that, you know people like, hey, this is a really good guy or woman who disagrees with the Catholic faith, but they're good at heart. You should sit down with them. I would love to do that. So definitely, if you're a member at TrendhornPodcast.com, maybe under this episode, you could leave a comment and say, hey, this person, it would not be frustrating. You two could have a really good conversation. So definitely leave us those suggestions in the comments under this episode at TrendhornPodcast.com. So lots been going on. But now I can talk more about current events. And I've got another current event, something even more current than the Brebeuf controversy, which we're going to go back to here shortly. But it goes down to this theme of should Catholic high schools fire people who are not being Catholic, who are providing a bad witness of the Catholic faith? Here's a story. It's been published in a lot of places. This is a Catholic news agency. Teacher fired for abortion rights social media posts sues Catholic school in South Carolina. The article says, a teacher at a Catholic school in South Carolina whose contract was not renewed because of her posts on Facebook in support of abortion rights is now suing the school, claiming that her First Amendment rights have been violated. Now, this lawsuit should just get tossed out the door in a second, by the way. You violated my First Amendment rights. Well, that might fly at a government school. Notice I didn't say public school, people. There are schools that are run by the government. If a school is run by the government, then its teachers are given First Amendment protections. The government cannot censor the private views of one of its teachers at a quote-unquote public school. Unless what they're expressing, you know, severely handicaps or inhibits their ability to teach. Now, remember that moral principle about the ability to teach, because that's going to come back in these Catholic school controversies. So, you know, First Amendment applies to government. Government cannot use the power of the law to keep you from expressing what you want to express, provided that it's not incitement to imminent lawless action. So government can prevent you from saying something like, hey, everybody, let's go beat up that guy. Sorry, freedom of speech, that's not under freedom of speech. But you can say even abstract things like such and such people deserve to be beat up. It's a hateful thing to say, but under the First Amendment, you have a right to say it. Now, in a private school or a Catholic school, sorry, doesn't work. They can fire you for you just say something they disagree with. you get the boot. The same thing happens in universities. So if a public university rescinded, if the university said, I, Trent Horn, can't come and speak because I'm a homophobic, transphobic, Islamophobic, kurophobic, that's the fear of clowns. So I'm not going to get invited to clown college because those people scare the living daylights out of me. The student group that invited me could launch a First Amendment challenge. You know, this public university can't just say Trent Horn can't come to campus, but a private university, including Catholic ones, can and have. They have a lot more discretion. So this lawsuit, I think, is going to be tossed out the door in a second. So the woman involved is Elizabeth Cox, and she was let go for posts quoting feminist activist Gloria Steinem, saying that gun purchasers should be subject to the same screenings as pro-life people, which really, when people say that, people who buy guns should be put at all the same laws that restrict abortion should restrict gun owners. Well, yeah, maybe the gun owners are going to use the guns to go and shoot people. Sure, that would make it more parallel with abortion. But otherwise, lots of people use guns for target practice, for hunting, for very lawful reasons. You can use a gun for all kinds of things that aren't bad. Abortion is only good for one bad thing. That's why it should be outlawed. And also the news story says the teacher put on her Facebook feed an article with no comment, but I think the article speaks for itself. She shared this article: Leslie Jones leads the charge against Alabama's abortion ban in the SNL season finale. All right, so the teachers at this school, she teaches at Bishop England High, they sign contracts agreeing to speak publicly to act in accordance with Catholic beliefs, whether or not they're Catholic. Even if they're not Catholic, they still have to aid in the intellectual and spiritual development of students. So a copy of the contract was included in the lawsuit, and this is what the principal said to Cox after firing her. When we confronted you with the post, you admitted to it, and moreover, reacted in a manner leading us to conclude you would not do so differently in the future. A little bit of a, almost like a double negative there. That she would continue to act the same way. That she was defiant. She said, yeah, I'm pro-choice. I'm for abortion. I'm going to share my views no matter what. Okay, well, here's your pink slip, and don't let the door hit you on the way out, lady. Because guess what? We're a Catholic high school. Our teachers uphold Catholic values. That's what Catholic high schools need to do. I did a whole article on this, by the way, at Catholic Answers Magazine online. You can go there at catholic.com. The article is called Catholic Teachers Have a Job to Do. And my point was, when people say, oh, they shouldn't fire teachers because they're pro-choice or because they're in a so-called same-sex marriage, ask them, what is the job of a Catholic high school teacher, of a Catholic teacher? Their job is not just to teach a subject. That's like thinking that a Catholic teacher, they just teach math. They just teach Spanish. And the job of teaching religion goes to the theology department. That's not the goal. Every Catholic teacher has a duty to share and build up students. The National Directory for Catechesis, which is published by the USCCB, the U.S. Conference of Bishops, says, quote, all teachers in Catholic schools share in the catechetical ministry, all of them. In fact, it goes on to say that school principals and leaders should, quote, recruit teachers who are practicing Catholics, who can understand and accept the teachings of the Catholic Church and the moral demands of the gospel. Catholic schools should only hire non-Catholic teachers as a last resort. Let's say there's no Catholic teacher that can teach French this year. We'll go with this teacher who's Protestant, who's pretty close, and we ask them to sign a contract saying you will not undermine the Catholic faith. Don't share your Protestant faith with students in class, for example. Don't undermine what we're teaching here. And so that's the goal, is that when you have a Catholic teacher at a high school, they should not do something that hinders their ability to evangelize students and to spread the gospel. So if they live publicly in a contradictory way to the gospel, to what the church teaches, how are they going to instill this in students? Here's the problem. Even if a teacher teaches math, you say, well, why does a math teacher have to be Catholic? Because, and I remember this in high school, before he starts getting into the quadratic equation, he's going to say, hey, did you guys see the news last night? Or, oh, did you hear about this? Yeah, here's what I think about that. Teachers, no matter what subject they are in, all end up teaching rhetoric. They all end up pontificating their own personal views. And students look up to teachers. If you have a teacher who's really good, they're a hero to students. You know, they're like Jaime Escalante in Stand and Deliver. How do I reach these kids? Which is a great movie, by the way. You got to watch it. Stand and Deliver. Edward James Olmos plays a real-life L.A. math teacher who got a bunch of students who barely knew arithmetic and got them to pass the calc calculus advanced placement exam. Hey, Mr. Escalante, what is calculus? My favorite line in the movie. And then the school accused them of cheating because the students did so well. And actually, you know, it's sad though, in real life, the other teachers hated Escalante because he did such a good job and held them to too high of a standard. Their teachers' union ways couldn't be parted from them. But my point is that students look up to teachers. So if you have a teacher who lives contrary to the faith and students see them as a hero, they're going to say, oh, well, maybe what they do that's in contradiction with the Catholic faith, maybe it's not so bad. Or maybe the Catholic faith is wrong and my teacher is right. That's why teachers are role models. You have to have people who are good teachers in that regard. So here is what happened then with these Catholic schools. That's why, of course, it makes sense that Cox was let go from Bishop England, because look, the Catholic Church is unabashedly pro-life. You're not pro-life. You're not going to be a witness of the gospel of life to our students. You can go. Goodbye. See you later. The same principle applies then with these schools in Indianapolis. So here's the two schools. You have Cathedral Catholic High School, which is under the Archdiocese, and Brebeuf Jesuit Preparatory School. Both have a teacher. The teachers are married to each other in a civil marriage. And so the Archdiocese said to both schools, you have to let these teachers go because the school wants them to sign a contract saying that you are a minister of the gospel. I don't actually know if that contract language is here in Cathedral about the ministerial exception, but you might be thinking, some people will say, well, wait a minute, discrimination laws still exist. Can a school fire a teacher because they're in a same-sex marriage? Yes, actually they can. They can fire them for almost any reason if the teacher is in their job description described as a minister of the gospel. Because in 2012, the Supreme Court said in Hosanna-Tabor versus the EEOC that religious organizations can pick their own ministers and the government can't tell them who to hire. So nobody can sue the Catholic Church. A woman can't sue the Catholic Church to become a priest and say she's being discriminated against for sex discrimination because the Catholic Church gets to pick who its priests are. Jewish synagogues can pick who their rabbis are. Muslim mosques can pick who their imams are. Religions get to choose their own ministers. That's freedom of religion. But ministers aren't just clergy. A minister can be somebody who ministers to children, and there are different ministries in the church. So if teachers at a Catholic school are ministers of the gospel, then they can be part of that religious minister exemption. And so discrimination laws would not apply in these cases. Whereas in a public school, you couldn't let someone go just because they're in a so-called same-sex marriage. So the Archdiocese asked Cathedral and Brebeuf to let these teachers go. Cathedral complied, and Brebeuf said they would not. And so Brebeuf Jesuit Preparatory can no longer call itself a Catholic school. That goes back to canon law. Canon 216 says that an association of the lay faithful cannot call itself Catholic without permission from the competent ecclesiastical authority. So if you want to start a Catholic group like Catholic Answers to do it the right way, you need permission from your bishop to operate with that name. Now, some groups just do it without permission. You've got Catholics for Choice back in Washington, D.C. Catholics for Choice disagrees with the church on abortion and contraception. They don't have permission to use the name Catholic in the name of their organization, but frankly, they don't really care. The same is true for Catholic schools. So you notice that some schools might be like, St. Pius X High School, not St. Pius X Catholic High School. That's because in canon law, section 803.3, it says that a school can only call itself Catholic with permission of the competent authority. You need the bishop's permission to call yourself a Catholic school. Now, some schools underneath a bishop have different, he has different authority over different schools. So in the case of Cathedral and Brebeuf, the archdiocese, the Archbishop Thompson in that archdiocese has more authority over Cathedral. Brebeuf is under the Jesuit province. So they get a lot more funding. They get a lot more access, to the sacraments, for example, through their connection with the Jesuits. So they're not as reliant on Archbishop Thompson, whereas Cathedral is. So what really disappoints me here is there was a letter dated June 23rd, 2019, from Cathedral High School explaining why this teacher was let go. And it never says the teacher was let go because he lived publicly in contradiction with the church's teachings on marriage, that he was publicly violating the sixth commandment by engaging in sexual relations outside of marriage, in this case, in the grave matter of sexual relations with another man in a false marriage. It never says any of that. You can tell from the letter that's signed by Matt Cohote, the chairman of the board, and Rob Bridges, who's the president of Cathedral. They basically say, well, we have to do this because the archbishop has got us by the tassels. This is what they say. Because they say, Archbishop Thompson made it clear Cathedral's continued employment of a teacher in a public same-sex marriage would result in our forfeiting our Catholic identity due to our employment of an individual living in contradiction to Catholic teaching on marriage. If this were to happen, Cathedral would not be able to celebrate the sacraments as it has done for the past 100 years, would lose the privilege of reserving the Blessed Sacrament in our chapel's tabernacle. We could no longer refer to Cathedral as a Catholic school. Our diocesan priests would no longer be permitted to serve on our board of directors. And our cathedral would lose probably the biggest thing they would not like. It would lose its 501c3 status and thus unable to operate as a nonprofit school. And so go ahead and read the letter online. I will include the letter in the description at trendhornpodcast.com because a few of the patrons have brought it to my attention. I should have more detailed show notes. And you know what? You have spoken and I have answered. Yes, I should do that so that you can, you know, if I mention something in the podcast, you can go and click on it. So I'll leave the letter on the show notes at trendhornpodcast.com in the description of this episode. And so but they go on to say, you know, we know people disagree with the church's teachings and this can be disheartening. We ask that you pray and be respectful, but no defense of the church's teaching in this matter. None at all. So that's why, honestly, Cathedral's response saddens me more than Brebeuf's response to this issue. And I want to play with you Brebeuf's response. There was an interview posted online between Michael O'Loughlin, who is a correspondent for America Magazine, that's the Jesuit magazine, and Father William Verbricki, or Father Bill Verbricki, who is the president of Brebeuf High School. So I want to play their interview. O'Loughlin's interviewing Father Verbricki about the situation where they refuse to let go of this teacher who is in a so-called same-sex marriage. And so they've decided to allow the archdiocese to not, they can't call themselves a Catholic school. They're just a Jesuit school. And so they stood against Archbishop Thompson in this regard. I want you to listen to the interview and then I'll add some comments to it.
I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit about how you and Jesuit leadership, both in the province and at the school, came to a decision not to abide by the Archbishop's decree that this employee's contract not be renewed.
Okay. Well, actually, Mike, this has been a two-year process. And 2 years ago, the Archdiocese was alerted to the reality that we had a teacher in the school who is in a gay civil marriage. And that prompted them to approach the school and talk about the situation.
Yeah, so notice it's not that the teacher sprung this on the school. In other cases, the teacher has sprung it on the school. Guess what? I got married to my partner, and so the school had to make a response. Brebeuf was fine with this. This is just peachy to them. Then the archdiocese discovered the situation, and they stepped in.
I would also say at the same time, the archdiocese has been pretty assertive in wanting all the Catholic schools to have the ministerial language in the contracts, whereby all faculty would be considered ministers of the gospel. And on both of those counts,
The audio cuts out here. By the way, he goes on and speaks. I'll play a little bit. Let's see what he says about this.
Who is our sponsor, which comes through the Midwest Jesuit Provincial's office, and both of those. With the language, we feel that would be inconsistent with our own way of governing and choosing to hire.
So, right, it would be inconsistent for a Catholic school to expect its teachers to be ministers of the gospel. Right, that'd be so inconsistent. You should ask, shouldn't we expect all teachers at a Catholic school to be ministers of the gospel to their students? Isn't that why I sent my kid to a Catholic school in the first place?
And so, Go on.
Yeah, so something you said there, that all teachers would be required to be classified as ministers. Over the years, we've seen a number of teachers at Catholic schools be let go from their jobs, often related to civil gay marriages. And that's because a lot of dioceses say that teachers in a Catholic school, regardless of the subjects they teach, that they're ministers of the church, and thus they have to abide by the church's teaching on marriage. But in this case, the school pointed out that the teacher in this instance is not a religion teacher. So in some sense that played into your decision that this ministerial exception, as it were, wasn't relevant here?
Correct. We would see that certainly the president, the principal, campus ministers, people in those positions, religion teachers, certainly we would be very careful, in terms of what their marriage status is. But we really feel for other faculty and staff that we would not use that as the yardstick for determining employment.
Okay, so see, there's the problem right there. There is the key problem that will infect and destroy your Catholic school. When you think the only people who teach religion at a Catholic school are the religious affiliates there, priests or nuns, and the religious teachers in the theology departments. Though, honestly, I could see them saying, well, they teach theology, but someone could know theology without having to live theology. Like, I could do a class on, I could study any kind of subject and not necessarily live it. I mean, I could teach ancient Greek philosophy, but I don't have to live as an ancient Greek philosopher according to their principles. I could teach Buddhist theology, not right now, obviously, but I could study and learn it, and I could teach it without having to abide by its principles. See, I could see them using the same kind of logic to say that even a theology teacher could live at variance with Catholic principles. But here's the thing. Once you have a bunch of other teachers on the faculty who you say, oh, well, they're not responsible for handing on the Catholic faith, then you've got people who it's not they're just going to be neutral towards the Catholic faith. They're going to end up undermining it. And you've got to have teachers. Why would you want a situation where you have theology teachers who are trying to pick up the pieces from what other teachers in the school end up breaking when they say and do things in contradiction with the Catholic faith? That is why the National Directory of Catechesis makes it clear every teacher is involved with the mission of catechesis, every single one. If you don't like it, go work somewhere else.
And because this particular teacher is not a religion teacher, campus minister, that we felt that we could not in conscience dismiss him from employment.
And you touched on this a little bit, but you said that when it comes to a teacher's job and then the teacher's personal life, that the Archdiocese had wanted to sort of have a broad rule about what would qualify for acceptable conduct. But it seems that often in these kinds of cases, it's mostly gay employees who are targeted. Can you talk a little bit about the concern about what's acceptable when it comes for the private life of a teacher?
First, you'll hear this all the time. And Father James Martin says this a bunch, that they're only targeting teachers who identify as gay and lesbian. Well, no, usually when teachers are like, oh, it's not because they identify as gay or lesbian, it's because they're involved in public advocacy for LGBT+. Or it's because they're involved in a public civil marriage with a person of the same sex. You can have your whatever your sexual attractions are, your sexual orientation, whatever your sexual behaviors are, whatever is going on inside of you. If you're a teacher of my kid at a school, keep that to yourself. My kid doesn't need to know about your sexual proclivities. That's not the place in the classroom. You can keep that to yourself. And if you keep that to yourself, no matter what your sexual, you could be someone who lives a chaste life who struggles with same-sex attractions. A teacher like that in my kid's school, fine. That's fine if they're obeying the church's teachings and living a chaste life. There could be teachers who struggle with temptations to adultery. It wouldn't be uncommon, but guess what? As long as they are in control of themselves and are living chastely and appropriately, then I'm not going to, invade their personal mind and their personal struggles. But it's when someone engages in clear, manifest public sin, when it's just clear, oh, this is this teacher's quote-unquote spouse, maybe they're going to come to the school to wish them well at an assembly or going to talk about what I did with my, quote, husband or, quote, wife this past weekend. That's where it's going to undermine what the church is trying to communicate on the meaning of marriage. How can it be you have the theology teacher that tells you what marriage is, and then you've got, at the same school, another teacher who is in a so-called same-sex marriage, a teacher you probably look up to that works at this school with everybody else? It's confusing for students, and it shouldn't have to be. Now, I want you to listen to Father Verbrecke when he talks about what do you expect of the private lives of teachers, because this is a question you should ask when this subject comes up. Even if a teacher is not Catholic, even if they're not Catholic, what moral standards should we hold them to? What moral standards do we hold them to? Because it's not always teachers who identify as gay or lesbian. As I put in my online magazine article, last year, a teacher at a Catholic high school in Maryland was fired after the school learned that he posted anonymously, by the way. He posted anonymously for a white supremacist organization. So he was engaging publicly, though anonymously, in the sin of racism. But here it's like, okay, that's clear. You're racist. You advocate these views. You have to go. And there's no controversy over that. You don't have Father James Martin coming in saying, well, if you fire a teacher who has racist views, are you going to fire the unloving teachers? Are you going to fire the teachers who don't give to the poor? This is discrimination to single out this teacher. You're going to have to fire every teacher who's ever committed a sin in their entire life, who's ever had a racist thought. Because that's the kind of argument he makes about firing teachers in so-called same-sex marriages. If you fire them, and this is the argument Father Fabricchi is going to make. What about teachers who are cohabiting, teachers in having sex outside of marriage? Here, I'll play his response, and then I'll give you my answer to that.
Well, first of all, I would say in this situation, it was the civilly gay marriage situation that prompted the Archdiocese to respond to us. But what, in fact... they would also look to, I think, other situations of a heterosexual teacher who is in an irregular marriage, for instance, divorced, remarried, but without an annulment. Also, teachers who might be cohabitating.
Well, let me talk about those two examples. First, the irregular marriage, that's something that's not public and manifest. The teacher could be divorced and remarried, at least divorced through no fault of their own, and they're remarried. If they are living in a state of adultery, though, I would say that at least one thing is it's different from the issue of the same-sex marriage. I still don't think they're good role models and probably shouldn't be teaching, because they can't teach students that remarriage after divorce is a sin unless the previous marriage has been annulled. They're not able to really teach that to students or uphold that teaching because they live contradictory to it. Now, it might be something you could tolerate. Let's say that, well, they're the only teacher that can teach this subject. They're in an irregular marriage. The students don't have to know. That's a more of a private fact that their previous marriage was or was not annulled. That's not something that's immediately publicly known, like it is if you're married to a man, so-called married, to a man or a woman. There's a difference between private sins, so teachers that use birth control, teachers, that engage in, acts of masturbation, whatever it may be, private sins that people have no idea about. Unless the teacher chooses to make it public, then it becomes more of an issue. But you're going to have that difference here. Now, even in that case, if you have a teacher who can't live up to the church's teachings and stands against them and proudly and defiantly so, then still, even here, I would say they're probably not a right fit for the school. Now, teachers who are cohabiting, I would say that's a public, Father Verbricki talks about, oh, what about teachers who are cohabiting? Oh, yeah, I would sack them. No way. You're out the door. Because I don't want our students cohabiting as soon as they graduate from our high school. You're presenting a bad example to them, just as if you had an affair with somebody. So what they're trying to say here is that, if you have teachers who are not Catholic, teachers who are not in the religious school, here's the other thing that's problematic. Let's say you have a math teacher who says they are Catholic. They are a role model of the students. You have a Catholic math teacher in a so-called same-sex marriage. Father Fabricchi says, well, they're not teaching religion. Yeah, but the students know they're Catholic, or they claim to be Catholic, yet they're in a same-sex marriage. So, okay, maybe it's all right. I would ask him, and you should ask people, what is the bare minimum? What about a teacher who's involved in the racist postings I just talked about? I want to continue and show you what the criteria are that matter to him as to why we should what teachers should be kept. Because you could say, look, even if a teacher is not Catholic, they're not a religion teacher, there's a bare minimum standard of morality they should abide by, whoever they are. There's a bare minimum standard of morality. What should that bare minimum standard be? So let's continue.
And, you could go down the list. Would also be teachers that could possibly fit into their categories of not being acceptable teachers in a Catholic school. And we just feel that those in those situations, depending on the rest of their moral character and their ability to teach their subject matter, those are the things that we also consider their character, how students relate to them and how they really continue to support our mission.
So are they a nice person, and do the students like them? That's the bare minimum standard, basically, for Father Fabricchi. Are they just a moral character, very vague, not really defined? Are they a nice person? Are they not a racist? You know, are do they not commit an unpopular sin? If they commit a popular sin, well, as long as the students like them, it's not that big a deal. Now, O'Loughlin, he goes on to ask, okay, yeah, but he drives a little deeper into the question, and I want to play Father Fabricchi's answer because I feel like he's really grasping here.
One that we again look towards the overall person, you know, and in terms of how they qualify to be employed by the school. And so, again, looking at the moral character, you know, how they carry themselves, you know, the subject matter they teach, are they experienced, you know,
Okay, so it's just, well, as long as they have their overall character, that's what matters, basically. But I would say, shouldn't a teacher, part of their overall character, be not violating one of the Ten Commandments? Not violating one of the Ten Commandments. So a teacher who's not a shoplifter, murderer, an adulterer, or someone who engages in fornication or publicly sex outside of marriage, should that be the bare minimum standard? Can we just go with the Ten Commandments? And I think they would say that some of the Ten Commandments would apply. Maybe to someone who murdered a born person, but not somebody who advocates for the murder for the systematic and lawful execution of unborn persons. You know, it comes down to popular and unpopular sins. And that's what's so sad for me to see in many Catholic schools. What they're craving is not to carry out the will of God, even if it's unpopular, but to be that popular school. There's this idea that in order to do holiness right, people have to like you. If they hate you, you must be doing something wrong. Remember what Jesus said in John, I think it's John 15. He said, if the world hated you, know that it hated me first. So then Michael O'Loughlin asks Father Fabricchi, well, what kind of feedback have you gotten from this decision? So I'm going to end with his answer to this.
Overwhelmingly positive, both within our own school community, the community of Indianapolis, but really nationally, it's been overwhelming in terms of the emails and the letters, the phone calls that we have received. Now, we also have had some negative ones that we expected, but I would say overall, I am grateful and very overwhelmed with the positive responses that we've received. And that's from young people as well as many, you know, senior Catholics, long-term Catholics.
And that is where I have to remember a scripture verse immediately came to my mind when Father Fabricchi said this, Galatians 1:10. Am I now seeking the favor of men or of God? Or am I trying to please men? If I were still pleasing men, I should not be a servant of Christ. Our goal is to graciously stand for the truth, even if it's unpopular. We should go and proclaim the gospel and do it in a way that it will offend people, ladies and gentlemen, but we should do it in a way so that people are offended by the truth and not by us. The goal is to make the truth offensive to them, to call them to conversion and repentance. We are not the ones who are offensive. Thank you guys so much, and I hope you have a very blessed day.
If you like today's episode, become a premium subscriber at our Patreon page and get access to member-only content. For more information, visit TrentHornPodcast.com.